Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Kay Murray here in the studio with Ali Moreno and Shaka Hislop. We will be talking Erik ten Hag to Manchester United. We'll be talking Karim Benzema, but we'll start with the Europa League, where Barcelona took on Eintracht Frankfurt away from home. It was a game that finished 1-1. The home sides took the lead through Ansgar Knauf, a nice goal in the 48th minute, but it was a nice move from Barca that leveled things out in the 66th through Ferran Torres. That is how the first leg looks after the first 90 minutes. Next week, it will be in Catalonia. Finally poised and at the game for us was Archie Rintoft. In fact, he loves Eintracht Frankfurt. All the fans were there in the stadium too. What can you tell us about how tonight went down, Archie?
The atmosphere, Kay. There are few places, I think, in European football that match a European night at Eintracht Frankfurt. Granted, before their Europa League run in 2019, they'd not had one in quite a while, but I think that's what makes it so special and so loud that even Xavi himself was talking on German TV after the game about how incredible the atmosphere was. And I think that you could see that they imposed themselves on the Barcelona players, the Eintracht Frankfurt players themselves and the fans, because Barcelona did not have the tempo, the fluidity that I would have expected to see of them, even if, okay, Frankie de Jong and Ousmane Dembele were on the bench. And ultimately, Eintracht Frankfurt should have won this game. And that feels odd. The colleague I had sitting next to me, a disguised Eintracht Frankfurt fan, shall we say, was predicting before the game that Barcelona were going to win this 6-0. Such was what she saw as the quality difference between the two. But come the end of it, Frankfurt have got to be disappointed that they've not won this game. Such were the chances that they had. And they score from their most unlikely chance of them all, from Ansgar Knauf.
And saying that then, from what you saw, Ali, do you think Barcelona will be relieved that they came away from this one with a 1-1 draw?
I think even before the game, as they're doing the walkthrough, there were some signs that this was not going to be the best game for Barcelona, because the feel, as the players were looking at it, they felt like the grass was too long. It was bumpy over here. It was bumpy over there. And you could see the players already complaining before the game even started. And that's how Barcelona started the match. Almost kind of hesitating, not quite sure as to what the tempo of the game was going to be, not quite sure about their possession. The quality of their possession was not as clean as you would expect Barcelona to be, certainly at this stage of the competition, and as good as they have been playing over the last couple of months. And Eintracht Frankfurt, to the point that Archie was making, Gibrilso, and this is 5 minutes into the game, it is a 100% chance that, imagine if it was a magical knife at Eintracht Frankfurt coming into the game. If he scores that early goal, how that changes the feeling in that stadium and what that does to the pressure that now Barcelona were feeling. And yet, you don't score those sort of goals. You don't take advantage of those opportunities. You go up in the game with a great goal, and you're thinking, okay, we're going to carry this momentum. And Eintracht Frankfurt were unable to do that. And you just allow Barcelona to get a little rhythm. And when you talk about the difference in quality between the two teams, just look at the goal by Barcelona and the combination. Dembele coming off the bench, Frankie de Jong coming off the bench, the little 1-2 action with Ferran Torres, and then the finish inside the 18-yard box, which we have discussed at times that he has had difficulties finishing with consistency. There was nothing wrong with this finish. That sequence of play from Barcelona was the first and seemingly only high quality of sequence in attack for Barcelona. They took advantage of it. They'll take the 1-1, take it back to the Camp Nou, and take care of it over there.
Yeah, they've got to be favorites to see it out now. Barcelona, Xhaka back at home.
With all question. Listen, I think when you come up against teams like Barcelona in the form that they're in, you've got to make your moments count. And Ali spoke about their big moment very early on, and that wasn't the end of it at all. And I think the stats in terms of possession doesn't really paint an accurate picture as to how good Eintracht Frankfurt were, how good their chances were, but they were only able to take one. And while you see that, whether you're an Eintracht fan or a Barcelona fan, you cannot help but think about Barcelona in the previous round against Galatasaray and how poor they were in the first leg at home and how well they played in the second leg when they needed to. And came through to this point. So you just wonder, if you're an Eintracht Frankfurt fan or one of those players, you just wonder if this was your moment spurned. And what do Barcelona look like in that second leg? And that is a concern because we've seen it time and time again, especially over recent weeks, when Barca are at their best, they are almost irresistible. Just ask Real Madrid.
So what was the reaction then if you're an Eintracht Frankfurt fan, Archie? Did they think, OK, this was a great result, we had a great time at home, we probably won't win the tie?
I think there's an outside chance still that they can do this, but it is still just an outside chance because of that quality that Ali was talking about there. I disagree on one thing. I think that whilst all the logic in me says 5 minutes is a good time to score, the fan in me says that's way too early against a big side like Barcelona. You don't want to wake the beast up at that point in the game. You want to keep them nice and on the floor and sleeping away until the second half. I think that, look, Eintracht Frankfurt, particularly with players like Kevin Trapp, he turned up tonight. Fantastic save early on that he made. Martin Hinteregger, you could hear the chants of Hinty, Hinty, Hinty every time he made a block, a clearance, a tackle. They have the characters in this team to be able to get this over the line. It's just, do they have the bottle? Because what Xhaka's talking about there, taking their chances, this is a common theme throughout the season. They've more than matched Bayern Munich. I mean, Kevin Trapp won that game single-handedly for them at the Allianz Arena earlier this season. In the game at home against Bayern, they had their chances against Borussia Dortmund. There's no way they should have lost that game. So they have shown that they can compete in those games. And I mean, this Barcelona side's quite a little bit above Villarreal. So you wonder how Eintracht might get on against them. Jokes aside, the point is, I don't think that Eintracht will get blown away unless they get too emotional. They need to just be able to take a deep breath. And I think that Oliver Glasner, you look at the game plan he found tonight, they're going to get chances on the counter. They just have to hold their nerve next week.
Well, we're not going to wait too long to find out, are we? Because next week we'll know more. Europa League continuing on. Here's a look at the bracket and the rest of the results, all pretty finely poised at this stage. Second legs coming up next week. And let's talk a little Erik ten Hag, shall we? Because it looks as though he is nailed on for the Manchester United job. And if you don't believe me, then you only need to ask Mark Ogden. His latest report, all about this man coming to Old Trafford and hopefully changing things around, as we now welcome in Mark and Don Hutchison as well. So, Mark, tell us what the latest is and what your report's about.
Well, the latest is that United have had what they call a thorough process, and I've been told that it's basically identified Ten Hag as the preferred candidate because football reasons, financial reasons, is obviously a cheaper option than Mauricio Pochettino, but they feel that he's also a guy that's got a career that's on an upwards trajectory, shall we say. He's not had any failures to worry about. So he's a guy that doesn't know failure at the moment. He's had a winning career so far. I think United are hoping that kind of positivity can rub off on his team. But, I do think that there are issues with Ten Hag that have to be addressed. Has he managed a big club in a big league, big players? Probably not. Can he handle a dressing room that's got a lot of demanding characters? Can he handle the pressure of being the Man United manager? You know, Ajax is a big club, but, you know, if you have a bad season in the Netherlands, I suppose you finish second or third. In England, if you have a bad season and you're Man United, you could be fourth or fifth or sixth. So it's a big pressure, but he's the guy that United want. He's the guy that's been recommended to the owners and to the chief executive. So unless Joe Glazer or Richard Arnold suddenly says, no, I'm not having this, we'll go for Mauricio Pochettino, which is unlikely, Ten Hag will get the job pretty soon.
Mark, do we know anything about Ten Hag's demands if he is to come into this role?
Well, in terms of demands, I think he just wants the football club to run like a football club. I think then that is a fair demand to make. I think he wants to make sure that he has a final say on players. He has a say on his backroom staff, the way that he plays. I don't think he's going to come in with a huge list of demands which are unreasonable. I don't think he's going to be like a Pep Guardiola type where everything has to, you know, go to his tune at Man City. I think with Ten Hag, he's realistic. I think he realises that the club he's going to has had problems in recent years in terms of recruitment. They haven't won many things. There have been bad decisions made at every level of the club. He can only look after the football side. Now, if he can look after the football side and make sure that the recruitment side is working properly, he has a chance. But if he could be the best coach in the world at Man United, if the recruitment is as bad as it has been for the last 10 years, he's going to struggle. They've wasted so much money over the years on players. They've overspent on players. They've backed out of deals that they could have done for people like Erling Haaland and Jude Bellingham. We both went to Borussia Dortmund. So the judgment in the market has been really poor. And if it continues to be poor, it's going to be difficult for Ten Hag to close the gap on Liverpool and Man City.
Now, Don, what are your thoughts on if this appointment is to go ahead?
It feels like a good one, Kay, to be honest. I think he's schooled the right way. Obviously, you know, disciple from Cruyff, and the performances that Ajax have been playing this season have been tremendous. And seasons before, Champions League, etc. Also, is it Bayern Munich? Is Pep's number two or in the reserves, if you like? Pep's sort of assistant. And Pep made sure that Ten Hag followed the same sort of rituals, the same system. So reserve team players under Ten Hag would then go straight into the first team. So he's trusted. So I think from what I hear and what I've seen as him being a manager, I think Man United are going to enjoy his style. I think Mark's right, though, when he talks about the money side of it, in terms of how much money Man United actually got to spend, because they haven't, they feel, or your perception feels like they're one of the richest in the world, but they haven't got hundreds of millions to spend. There's reports in the papers today over in the UK that they want to buy Calvin Phillips, they want to buy Declan Rice for £120 million, they want to buy Harry Kane for £100 million, totaling about £250, £300 million. Man United haven't got that sort of money, so recruitment is going to be absolutely key.
What are a club like Manchester United going to be expecting of a coach like Erik ten Hag, Shaka?
I think they need to, well, not that they're expecting of Erik ten Hag, but what's needed for Manchester United is just a change in culture around who that football club is, how they position themselves, not just as a spending club, as Don was pointing out. But you also have to, and this was one of Sir Alex Ferguson's great strengths. Despite the money that he spent in reinforcing that squad and making it one of the best in European football, he never lost focus of the academy and bringing players through and having that save the first team, either directly through players or through sales. So you have to understand who Manchester United are culturally and how they've gone away from that in recent years. And that's one of the things I like about Ten Hag, given his experience with Ajax. Listen, the easier choice would have been Pochettino, given his experience within the Premier League. But when you look at Ajax and how they do business, and I understand the open nature of the Eredivisie maybe doesn't serve well in the Premier League, but Ajax always brings players through. And having somebody who understands that transition, moving players from academy into the reserves, into the first team squad, I think moves you in the right direction. Now you have to get that other recruitment side to it absolutely right. And you have to trust that Ten Hag can also do that. So I for me, it ticks a lot of boxes in terms of Manchester United rediscovering who they are in positioning themselves to compete. It's not going to be immediate, but they have to get themselves back on that footing.
Going back to what Mark was just saying, and the most damning in the statement was that Ten Hag is trying to find a place in a football club that is run like a football club. Man, if that's the standard now for Manchester United, that you're hoping that the football club is run like a football club, the standard is so incredibly low. But yes, that is the reality, and that is bare minimum. That is the lowest common denominator, hoping that you're walking into a job in which football decisions are the ones that benefit the football club. and that you keep those decisions outside of whatever financial decisions you make in terms of investment in the club. Investment in the club should be first and foremost on the football side. And then the financial side takes care of itself because of the ongoing success on the field. They've gotten it all the way around. The wrong way around if you're Manchester United. And while I agree wholeheartedly with what you're saying in terms of the identity of the club and bringing players through, they also have to change what the priorities are. The team should be priority number one. And then everything else comes with it.
Mark, are the fans, the Manchester United fans, excited about the appointment of Ten Hag?
Yes, they are. I think it's kind of a universal approval if and when it gets done. I think that they see him as a change from what they've had in the past. I think in the last three or four managers have been guys that have maybe failed somewhere else. I think Jose Mourinho, Louis van Gaal had failure on the record. They came to United almost to relaunch the career. I think Ten Hag isn't that character. I think they feel a sense of a breath of fresh air with Ten Hag in many ways, that they haven't got a guy that's, you know, trying to rebuild his career. So I think, yeah, they are excited. They look at his Ajax team and think that it's an exciting team. Like I said, I think there are one or two little reservations there about whether he has the character and the mentality to deal with the pressure that comes with managing the biggest club in the biggest league. And that is the biggest club in the biggest league that hasn't won anything for nearly 10 years, anything substantial. There's a lot of pressure on the next Man United manager. And Erik ten Hag at this stage, he's 52 years old, has never managed in a big league at a big club. So, you know, it might take you like a duck to water. He may really struggle with it. So that is a big challenge that we have to wait to see if he can address.
There's a big talk about this on the latest Gab and Jules podcast. You can download that wherever you do get your podcast. And Jules is very happy. Have a long-sleeved Inter shirt. And he said you can't get long-sleeved shirts anymore.
That jersey's a little big on Jules, I must say that.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Coming up this weekend, lots of La Liga for you on ESPN Plus, and all eyes will be on Real Madrid after their performance against Chelsea midweek in the Champions League. They're taking on Getafe in what's an alternative Madrid derby, 2:30 Eastern on Saturday. It's Levante Barcelona on Sunday. But let's see some of the reaction, shall we, to Karim Benzema's display at Stamford Bridge. Big Ben, say Marca. I mean, that one explains itself, doesn't it?
I think it does, Kay. Thank you for that.
Talking about his three goals there, the King of Europe, obviously, the Champions League, and Karim Benzema is a match made in football in heaven. That's long been the case. Karim the Dream, just taking a look at some of these stats. Third player with a hat-trick against the current title holders. Second with hat-tricks in consecutive knockout round games. Cristiano Ronaldo did it in 16-17. Away hat-trick, Ronaldo Nazario did that. Broke his own record as the oldest player to score a Champions League hat-trick. He's 34 years old. Fourth place to score 80-plus Champions League goals. Look at the names there. Ronaldo, Lewandowski, Benzema, Messi. And they're just going to take a look at Adriano 2004-05, at Bale 2010-11, Inter versus Tottenham. Mark Ogden was at this game. How incredible was it to witness it in person, Mark? Is everybody right to be going as crazy as they are about Benzema's performance?
Absolutely. It was one of those nights, certainly the second goal, where there was a lot of like people going wow in the press box. It was like, how did he get that one in? It was just an incredible header. And he really is a master of his craft, isn't he? People talk about the great centre-forwards like Lewandowski, Harry Kane, and Benzema is absolutely in that bracket. And, you know, I remember seeing him play for Lyon against Man United in 2009, and he scored this fantastic goal on the turn against, I think he turned Rio Ferdinand, scored for about 20 yards. And at that point, he was one of the hottest young strikers in Europe, and so Alex Ferguson tried to sign him as a replacement for Cristiano Ronaldo when Ronaldo went to Madrid, and obviously Madrid got Benzema too. And so that means he's been there for 13 years. I mean, it's just remarkable that the longevity at a club like Real Madrid, that he's still there, and he's actually, you know, he's probably spent 5 or 6 years, you know, doing everything for Ronaldo, doing Ronaldo's running, carrying the load for Ronaldo. And now that Ronaldo's been gone for 3 or 4 years, he's really come out of his, you know, the shadows really and prove what a fantastic player he is. And, you know, I don't like obsessing on the Ballon d'Or. I think it can take away, you know, from team achievements. But I think this year, if you're looking at a candidate right now for Ballon d'Or winner, I think Karim Benzema is right up there.
I mean, it's hard to argue against when we're seeing the performances that we are from him week in, week out, and what it's like when Real Madrid don't have him in the side.
Right. It's the definition of an MVP, most valuable player. Karim Benzema is given a clinic. Every day that he steps on the field is given a clinic as to how to play the center forward position. For as much as I love the goals, they were all sorts of different movements that he had in this game that go along with the finishing qualities that he has displayed that tell you he is just the full package in terms of playing the position. If you're a young kid out there, man, you watch this guy play because it's the variety that he gives this team. He can give you the hold-up play. He can drop underneath and play from there as well. The movement away from the ball. And then the hunger to get into the 18-yard box and finish the chances. And once he gets himself into the position to finish the chances, then the decision-making that goes into executing those headers as we saw yesterday. It's a fraction of a second that he has in order to decide, how am I going to put this in the back of the net? And he is so very resourceful. He has been outstanding. He has been the best player for Real Madrid for years now. And let me tell you something. Real Madrid, the one player that you have to wrap very carefully the rest of the season, and you make sure that you take care of him. If Ancelotti has to go and massage Karim Benzema himself, go and do it, Carlo, because he is the key to their success.
Yeah, and 3 goals in this one. Heavy favourites, as you can imagine, going into the second leg, which is at the Santiago Bernabeu. And just taking a look at the odds here, it is Real Madrid with the 3-1 lead on aggregate so far. And in fact, even Thomas Tuchel, the Chelsea manager, isn't giving his side a hope.
No, not at the moment, no.
Expand.
Sorry?
You expand on that?
What is expand?
Why it's not alive?
Same.
Why it's not alive? Because we have to find our level back. I don't know where it is, but since national break, if things change, maybe, but how many clubs in worldwide football won with what we need? 3 goals difference. How often did this happen? So maybe it's only realistic to answer like this and should not get fatalistic and think like I give the wrong message. I mean, let's be honest.
Don, were you surprised to hear this from Tuchel? I know he's a bit rattled after the game, but still, it's quite the statement.
Yeah, I think there's more to it, Kay, to be honest. I think he's going through a tough time personally regarding his marriage. I think what's going on behind the scenes at boardroom level of the football club, he's looking at the performance against Brentford. His team's been torn apart against Real Madrid and completely outplayed and outclassed. And I think that press conference for Thomas Tuchel, I think, was an emotional one. And I think he struggled. So we have to give him a little bit of time. I wouldn't read too much into it. I don't think there's any mind games going on. I think it was just a very honest, emotional interview. And he's right in what he's saying, really, when the question got asked, is there any way back? And he's sort of saying, well, not at this level. You know, we got battered against Brentford 4-1. We got battered against Real Madrid 3-1. If we play like this in the Bernabeu, we'll get hammered. That was his words. So he's being emotional. I think when everything calms down and the dust settles, I think he'll refocus, that he'll go again against Southampton. That's a must win because he also mentioned Southampton. He said, if we play the same, we won't even beat Southampton. So we've got no chance of beating Real Madrid. So their focus has to be on Southampton. You beat Southampton. If they do, they generate a little bit of momentum. Then you can try and look towards Real Madrid away from home. But that feels like a long way away at the moment. That was a very emotional press conference, I think.
On the surface, I would agree with what Don is saying. However, there's one small detail here that I think is important. The same things that he said in the press conference, he said on the field right after the game. So he doubled down in the press conference. The emotional part I could take if it was right after on the field. But then he took that same message and put it through onto the players, I believe, in the press conference. I think this is not just a guy who's emotional. I think this is a guy who's trying to reach his players and saying, playing like this, we're not going to achieve the things that we need to achieve. It's a message that, without hanging your players out there, is a message that is straight to the players and saying, you have to improve, and you have to improve now.
It is mind games.
I think to that point, it's mind games, but needed mind games. It's an emotional statement right after a game, but it's more about the week that Chelsea have had. Mm-hmm. After losing to Brentford, this wasn't necessarily about the Real Madrid game. This was about the week. This was about Chelsea unable to refine their focus, I think is the phrase that he used. Unable to rediscover who they were. And despite everything that he's done with them since the international break on the training ground, despite everything that he said since that Brentford result, you produce a performance like this. And you feel the frustration for Thomas Tuchel. And I think that's where this was born. Now keep in mind, this is a Champions League quarterfinal against Real Madrid. And for as much praise as we've heaped on Real Madrid for this performance against Chelsea, in 3 hours of football against PSG, Real Madrid were the better team for nearly 30 minutes, if so much. And yet now you come into this at home and you were outclassed to that level. It speaks to how far you have fallen since being crowned European and world champions. And that's the frustration for Thomas Tuchel. Not that they were poor on the night, not that they lost on the night or have to go to the Bernabeu and turn around a result, that they have simply fallen so far and nothing that he has done on the training ground has seemed to resonate.
Confirmation that indeed was a message to the players is that in those statements, when they asked him about the second leg, he said, well, the second leg? No, let's talk about Southampton first. Southampton, that's the priority because, hey, guess what? Top four is now in question. Now it's a problem. Now you got issues. And you got yourself in a race that you didn't have a place before, but because of your lack of performances, now you're having some questions to answer. And he's asking those questions of his players, even if it is by way of the media.
And Mark, what are they going to do with Lukaku?
Oh, well.
Well, I mean, I was watching the game last night. I was looking at the bench, and you've got Lukaku and Werner, £150 million worth of talent just wasted there. They're stuck with Lukaku. There's nothing they can do with him because, you know, he's had a long contract on big wages with a huge fee. They've nowhere to sell him. He's got nowhere to go. I mean, Inter Milan might want to take him back, but they couldn't afford him. Who would take Romelu Lukaku right now? Who could afford to pay for him right now? I think what Lukaku has to do is just knuckle down and realise that he's at Chelsea now for the next 2 or 3 years. Get over any problems he's got. Maybe stop sulking. You know, I think there's been a bit of a sulking going on there with Lukaku this season. He likes to be the main man. He's not the main man at Chelsea. He's just got to get his head down because this is the best club he's going to be at for the rest of his career. I think once he leaves Chelsea, he's on the way down, Lukaku. So he really has to save his big chance at the club. He keeps telling everyone that he's always dreamed of playing for. So now he's there, take the chance.
Don't you agree with what Mark's saying about Lukaku?
I agree with what he's saying, where he's saying he needs to take the chance for sure, but I don't see a long-term future. I think he wants to move. I think he's pining to go back to Serie A. It might not be Inter, it might be Juve. I've got no idea where he's going to go. But I just don't feel as though he fits Chelsea's style. He doesn't fit Thomas Tuchel's style. They're a possession-based team. I watched him last night. He had two chances where one was quite a simple chance to hit the target. The rest was a mile off, but his build-up play and his hold-up play, he was trying to find spaces. Spaces weren't there. Chelsea were going side to side. I kept an eye on his movement. There was nowhere for him to run into. I've listened to the interviews that he's made, and I just can't help but feel a little bit like Timo Werner. For Chelsea fans, if they're sorry to see them go, I don't know. But I don't think it's going to happen for Timo Werner at Chelsea. I think he'll move back to the Bundesliga, somewhere like Borussia Dortmund. And I can see Lukaku moving back to Serie A in the summer. I just don't see it as a natural fit. It's a shame because I think when he signed, I think most people, I wasn't one of them, but I think most people thought he was going to be golden boot and take Chelsea to a title. Golden boot maybe, but not to take Chelsea to a title. I think the way off Man City and Liverpool, but I expected a lot more.
Mark, you get the final word on this.
I mean, I think Don's right. I think he would like to go back to Italy, but it's the money situation financially. I just don't see who's got the money to do it and who can pay his wages, pay the fee. If Chelsea are going to let him go, Chelsea are going to have to lose a lot of money. And the situation at Chelsea's changed, as we know. But I think with the next week or 10 days, there'll be a new owner announced. And the new owner might think, well, I don't want to waste, you know, £30-40 million by cutting Alisson Lukaku. So they might have to stick with him and hope that they can find a way to get the best out of him. But like Don said, I don't think his heart's in it. So I think they're stuck with a guy that doesn't want to be there.
What a massive weekend it's going to be in the Premier League. Obviously, we'll see how Chelsea fare in that game against Southampton. But it will be all eyes on Manchester City and Liverpool. That is the game. Look at that. Just 1 point between them. This could change everything. And not only are they facing off in the Premier League, then there is going to be FA Cup coming up after that as well. So here are your predictions, guys. Don has gone for a Liverpool 2-1 win, as has Mark Ogden. Ali and Shaka sitting on the fence a little bit and going for a 1-1 draw. So, Don, why have you got the win?
Listen, I mean, you're looking into your crystal ball, aren't you? And you're trying to second guess what you think is going to happen. I go back to the Arsenal game when Liverpool played Arsenal and Firmino came off the bench and Salah. They're too strong.
Too strong. OK, well, they get them on FA Cup as well on ESPN Plus the following week. I will have much more on that game coming up on ESPN FC every day next week, no doubt. Man City against Liverpool. April 16th, 10 Eastern, ESPN Plus. Do not miss that one, especially with a bit more spice because of whatever has happened in that Premier League encounter. Bayern Munich losing to Villarreal in the Champions League. Will they turn it around in the second leg? First loss this season, 7 wins and 1 draw previously in the competition. It was a 30-game streak of scoring at least one goal. It was snapped 2019 that happened at Liverpool as we welcome back in Archie Rintutt to tell us what's been the reaction to Bayern losing to Villarreal.
Julian Nagelsmann said it was a deserved defeat, and I'd say that's the general vibe as well here in Germany. No one's debating that. I think, to be honest, people are saying, well, Bayern got lucky that it wasn't more, particularly Manuel Neuer with what happened near the halfway line with him and Gerard Moreno. I think he was probably getting flashbacks of what Dejan Stankovic did to him all those years ago when he was in a Schalke shirt at San Siro. So, look, that was by no means the best that Bayern have been, but it's a Bayern Munich side that we've seen that kind of performance and those opportunities afforded to teams in the Bundesliga this season, and that there's just not been the same intensity or quality of opposition to take advantage of those things. Seen Deo Upamecano look shaky throughout this season. He has really struggled to get going. And for what they have in their back line, it's not good enough right now. I think what's also very concerning for Julian Nagelsmann was how often or how little chances that they were able to create. They didn't have a shot in the first half. This is Bayern. They were the overwhelming favourites for this game. And look, you saw what happened in the second leg against Salzburg. The fact is, though, this Villarreal side are not going to open up. They've not got the same philosophy as Salzburg do. So this is a really tricky second leg for Bayern to negotiate. And right now, in the form they're in, it's going to be tough.
They are big favourites for the second leg, though, Archie, understandably so. It is just a one-goal lead. It is back at the Allianz Arena. You're not putting your money on Villarreal to win this one, are you?
I'm not putting it. Yeah, what percentage of it? I'm putting 40% of it. I think the odds are a bit misleading in that sense. Look, Bayern have the firepower to blow many a team away. But right now, the form that they've been in, I saw them in the draw away at Hoffenheim a few weeks ago. They followed that up with a draw against Leverkusen. Okay, they beat Freiburg at the weekend comfortably in the end, but there's just too many sticky moments right now. And there's a lot going on in the background at Bayern with the deals of Robert Lewandowski, Thomas Müller, Manuel Neuer, Serge Gnabry, 4 key players to that club, all up in the air. And I think there's a point when that's dragging on, where that starts to make a difference. Bayern do have the ability in their squad and have that focus to put these things to one side. But these noises get louder, I think, the more that these performances continue to be below par where you would expect them to be. And I think Julian Nagelsmann is also not very happy with the way that the transfer business has been done. He was very dissatisfied with the fact that Niklas Süle has been allowed to leave for Borussia Dortmund at the end of the season. He was somebody that he wanted to keep. So they have to go at least to the semi-finals of the Champions League, or else this is a failed season for Bayern Munich.
Well, Bayern Munich will be back in action on Bundesliga this weekend against Augsburg, a team that beat them in the reverse fixture. So we'll see how this one plays out on Saturday. The match day gets underway, though, on Friday with Stuttgart taking on Borussia Dortmund, and Archie and the team will be there for that one. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Welcome into our ESPN FC studios. Kay Murray, Ali Moreno and Shaka Hislop here. We've also got with us Don Hutchison and Mark Ogden too. And we'd like to focus on World Cup 2022. We're now just months away from it. We're going to talk the positive stuff, the front runners, the favourites, and the surprises too. So Brazil are the favourites. England jumped up.
England?
After the draw was made. They're now level with the holders, France. Behind them, Spain, Argentina, and you can see how it goes along. Mark Ogden, surely England are your favourites?
No. Look, I mean, the group they're in, I mean, I think statistically, it's actually the toughest group in the World Cup. I think if you look at the average positions of, you know, Iran, the US, and whichever team from Europe qualifies, I think it's actually a tough group, but it lacks, obviously, a second heavyweight. But I think if you're asking for my favourite, I think that France, you know, they've just got proven talent in every area of the pitch. I think maybe the goalkeeper's a slight question mark with Lloris, but for me, I think you've got to look at France all the way.
What do you think, Don? France are going to do it again?
Yeah, I think they're my favourites, Kay. Listen, I think there's a group of teams that might surprise. I think Spain are well equipped with their youngsters. But I think overall, I think Mark's right. I think when you look at the depth of what the French have got in every single position, I mean, they can have two or three players for every position. They're that strong. And if they just get their act together and there's no fighting in-house and there's no drama and they concentrate on actually winning the World Cup, they surely have to be favourites, I think.
But Brazil are the favourites, Ali. So can you make a case for a South American side to win it this year?
Wait, you just said that Brazil are the favourites, right?
With the bookies.
I think that is a case in itself. The attacking talent that Brazil has available in that final third is second to none in the world. There are options everywhere. And while we try to focus on Neymar, and rightfully so, then you forget about, Vinicius Jr. So focus on Neymar all you want, but then who's going to be the beneficiary of that? Well, it's going to be Vinicius Jr. And it's going to be Antony on the right-hand side. Or is it Everton? Or is it any other player that you can pick out? Paquetá, who's having a great season with Lyon. There are options everywhere for Brazil. And to balance that out, they also have in the midfield strength. In the back, they're being solid. In the goalkeeping position as well. There's a lot to like about Brazil and a team that seems to be built for a tournament like this.
Who are you going for, Shaka?
I think Argentina. Argentina defending South American champions against Brazil. Brazil, without question, one of the deepest squads in the tournament, along with France. But I think that everything is coming just right for Argentina at exactly the right time. At exactly the right time for Lionel Messi as well. So despite what everybody else makes around the favourites, 9-1 with the bookies, I think this is Argentina's moment. Finally, they're playing with a squad They continue to have that focus in Lionel Messi. They have a manager, Lionel Scaloni, who understands this team and understands getting the best out of them. I think this tournament has come at the right time for them.
And here's the thing about Argentina and Brazil. If they both hold serve, if they both win their groups and everything stays true to what we see in the bracket, they're going to meet in the semifinal. You talk about a game to decide who goes into the final. Brazil, Argentina, and all its history. That would be fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, there's a song about it too, so it'd be great fun to watch. I'm not singing it.
What?
Maybe closer to the time if it happens, I will. I do know it. I do know it. Mark, have you got any surprises there? And what constitutes a surprise for you in the World Cup?
Yeah, I mean, my surprise team, I think, could be Iran. And people might ask, why is that? But yeah, they're in an awkward group. But I think people will underestimate Iran. They're the highest ranked Asian team. And for them, it's pretty much a home tournament. You know, Qatar is just across the water in Straits of Hormuz. And I think there'll be more Iranian fans there than anybody else. And I think that first game against England, a week after the last game of the Premier League, I think England could be caught out by Iran. I think they're a very good team. They've got a mix of players playing in Europe and quite a lot playing in Iran. I think people will underestimate Iran. I'm not suggesting they're going to win it, but I think they're a team that people need to certainly keep an eye on. And in terms of a surprise team which could go to the semi-finals, I think Senegal are, you know, the African champions, best team in Africa for the last 3 or 4 years. They could surprise people. They've got a very strong team. But I think if you're looking for a team that might get out of the group and surprise people, I think Iran.
Guys, did Iran or Senegal feature in your surprises, Shaka?
Senegal was mine. I'm looking for them to go deep in this tournament, defending African champions, and as deep an African squad as we've seen for quite some time. And again, for them, things coming right at the right time. Buoyed by that AFCON win, I think they come into this tournament with a sense of belief that we've not seen from an African team, probably not since Senegal back in 2002.
I do have a question. If we've asked a couple of our pundits already as to what the surprise is going to be, and both of them tell us Senegal or mention the name of Senegal, is it really a surprise then? If you look at sexy picks around the world in terms of who is it that could potentially be that team that does something crazy in the World Cup, yeah, it is Senegal. But I just don't know that they have enough in terms of, and what is a surprise? That's the other thing that we have to define. What is a surprise for Senegal? Because if they get out of the group, that's not a surprise. If they advance past the round of 16, maybe now we're getting into a surprise territory. Anything past that, then you think, yeah, this is a surprising run for Senegal. But it's a talented team. Mm-hmm. So nobody would be surprised if indeed they make a run, because they have resources available to them on the field. They have a game winner in Sadio Mane. They have in Koulibaly, a guy who for years has been a shutdown defender, not quite nowadays, but he has that sort of experience and that sort of presence. And there is talent everywhere that you look at. Mendy in goal. So there are names of players who have been important for the clubs for years. And for a team like this to make a run, for me, would not be a surprise.
So you talk about what defines a surprise. Wait for it. Uh-huh. Don. Is it right that you've got Spain as your surprise?
Well, okay, there we go. See, now, what are we talking about?
By the way, has anyone got any subtitles for what Ali was just saying there? Are they a surprise? Are they not a surprise? Are they a surprise? Are they not a surprise?
Well, it sounds like you understood it.
I asked for Spain and the boss man said no. Then I asked for Croatia and the boss man said no. So then I went Senegal, African champions, and then I just thought, I looked at the squad. No, but come on. You look at the names and you go, Edouard Mendy.
I want to know why Spain would have been your surprise.
Because they're young. Because they're very, very young and they might not be equipped to go and win the World Cup. Because they're a young, young side. They're emerging. They're going to be amazing. So to stick them down as favourites, I think it's a tad optimistic, I think.
No, nobody's put them as favourites.
No, but...
And not being favourites doesn't automatically make you a surprise either.
Apparently it does, Shaq. Spain, by definition, cannot be a surprise if they do well in the tournament.
I mean, technically third favourite really here, because England and France are a level.
So, it is Spain, right? We're talking a very talented team. If they had, oh my goodness, if they had a proven goal scorer, then this number would be even higher for Spain, because that's how talented they are behind that front line. Nobody would be surprised if Spain makes a run. Did we not see him in the Euros?
Correct.
They made Italy look silly at times. Italy ended up winning the whole thing. The talent for Spain is as high as there is in this competition. Just in the front line, it doesn't match the rest of the team.
We'll let Don talk Senegal another day because we've got plenty of time. The World Cup is still quite a few.
Are they a surprise?
Away.
I don't know.
Apparently not, Ali. And if there were subtitles there, people would have found out that. Would they really be surprised? Ali Moreno's not too sure. Anyway, thanks so much for being with us as we continue to talk World Cup here on ESPN FC.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Conference League action. This is how it's looking. Is that Bodo Glimt with a win over Roma again?
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. 6 goals in the game between Feyenoord and Slavia Prague. 3-3. That finished. And Marseille against Pau 2-1. This at the quarter-final stage. And we wonder if this impacts Xhaka's power ranking this Thursday.
It was a difficult week this week. With Bayern losing to Villarreal. How do I put Villarreal any higher than six, given that they're what, seventh in La Liga? I couldn't put them above Bayern. I'm sorry. Anyway, where are we?
I don't know.
As we were, Chelsea are out for obvious reasons. Bayern are down, hence Barca and Real move up. PSG are back in. Inter within touching distance at the top of Serie A and a game in hand. Ajax still running away with things in the Eredivisie. And AC Milan, despite drawing with Bologna, still top, still in at number 10.
Right, okay, Shaq. Your struggles with Villarreal are consistent throughout. Apparently, if you get one good result, you get in your power rankings.
Well,
because Villarreal.
It depends on who.
Villarreal, this very week, they lost to Levante, who are destined to relegation in La Liga. Yet you felt that Villarreal, in your power rankings, should be number six.
They had one eye on Bayern.
All right, Shaka, it was a local derby.
They beat Bayern. I think they beat Bayern.
Right, they beat Bayern, but they're below Bayern.
Yeah, because they lost to Levante. They're seventh in the league. I tried to work the data, but it just wasn't coming out.
So Don, when you were reading them out, Don had his head down like this the whole time. Why, Don?
I heard Xhaka say that Villarreal are in sixth, but they're in seventh in La Liga. Mm-hmm. So that's a mystery. And we're now on a one-game basis on a power rankings. Where's Bodo Glimt?
I can't Bodo Glimt in there. I could barely pronounce Bodo Glimt.
Don wanted to talk about them tonight. He's that excited about
them. We've got Bodo Glimt knocked out Celtic a couple of rounds ago. He's clinging. Don's clinging.
Juventus about one loss in 16. Juve, one
to
loss
Inter.
In 16.
And Inter are in. They lost to Inter. Inter are in.
Where are you looking?
Am I looking there?
Inter are in seven.
Inter are third.
Inter
are 4 points clear of Juventus. Give me a break.
Inter, Shaka,
you need a break.
Inter before the Juve game had one win in seven. Inter had one win in seven. They win one game and they go to where? Eighth.
Juve are 4 points below Inter.
Are we still clinging to El Clasico? Why are Barcelona ahead of Real Madrid? Why are Barcelona ahead of Real Madrid this week?
Because Barca just beat Real Madrid 4 last week.
Last week?
Real Madrid in...
Last week?
That's more like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, 3 weeks ago. Real Madrid, they can't get above
there. Barca,
be yourself.
Definitely Shaka's don't want to be yourself, Kay.
Don't let these two influence, okay? I hold you in far higher regard than that. Don't let these
Shaka's
two...
Shaka's had a three-week
right.
nap.
Maybe he did. Anyway, that is Shaka's power rankings. It's got his name on it, so if he says it, it has to go, all right?
Google. It's Google-esque. It's
power.
Google-esque.
Power outage.
We saw the research you put into it today anyway.
Okay, what did I just say? Don't let these two drag you down.
That's it for the show. This same team will be back for extra time, so stick around. There are your questions next. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. We have Ale, Shaka and Don. My name is Kay Murray, and we will start straight away with some percentage questions.
Oh, here we go.
For Don.
Strength. Man.
You know.
Strength.
You know what's Don.
You know.
The strength of his
once
game.
Once Don is on, 100% chance that we'll have percentage questions.
It is the strength
it's
of his game.
It's about 4 o'clock in the morning, and I've just commentated on Bodo Glimt beating Roma. This could
all
be
right,
my
let's
worst
get them out of the way, then.
Percentages
it's not 4
ever.
O'clock in the morning. Where's
let's
your
let's get them out of the way. He'll be getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning. There's a new baby on the way. All right. Liverpool to win the Premier League this season.
Oh, that is a 51-49.
Lampard to save Everton from relegation. Sorry, Frank.
25%.
25?
Chelsea to reach the Champions League semi-final.
Ooh, boy.
20%.
Ooh. That's right. Spurs to be in the Champions League next season.
Oh, that's a good one. That is a good one. I think it's a two-horse race, so it has to be 50-50 between them and Arsenal.
United to win the Premier League in the next 3 years. Zero. All right.
You know, did you notice the angst in Don's face when he said it's a two-horse race? I better make sure I get this math correctly. 50-50. That's like the guy who's taking a penalty kick and takes it right down the middle. I just want to make sure.
Smash this.
He's getting that.
Let me just say, as Don's
Ali
percentages go,
well.
This was a good.
Ali
this was good today.
Well.
You didn't mind it.
Yeah, I'm finding it hard to disagree too much with Don's percentages. And let's be honest, Don ain't with percentages.
Well,
I love that you added the too much. You're trying to compliment. Him, but
but let's be honest, it's a low bar, right? Let's just be honest, it's a low bar.
All right, Ali, you can answer on behalf of everybody here. Why do media and pundits make such a hoopla when a manager criticizes their players in public? Every time a manager criticizes the team, you guys act like it's the end times and start questioning the manager and saying things like, should he have criticized in public?
Because you keep it in-house.
Mm-hmm.
Your dirty laundry in-house. Mm-hmm. And once you shut those doors to the locker room, once you go back to the training ground, you can have a go to whoever you want to, however you want to do it. Right? That is fair game. And you can point at the video and you can say, why are you not doing this? Why are you not doing what I asked you to do? All the things and however you want to go and deliver those news, it's fair game. But when you put it out in the media, now you're hanging out your players to dry. For us to then go and say, well, this guy's not doing this, this guy's not doing that. Now the criticism builds and takes a life of its own. Something that could have been controlled inside the locker room, sort of something that should have been inside the locker room, now becomes a public matter. And here's the other thing that I think is most important of all. Once you go and decide to criticize your players out in the media and out in the public eye, you still got to go back to the locker room and you still got to go face those same players that you're going to need for them to perform in order for you to be successful. So it's a fine balance. If you go out there and you criticize in the public eye, then you better be ready to accept the blowback that is coming from the players.
ESPN FC spokesman Alejandro Moreno.
Thank you very much.
Don, can Dele Alli ever find his way back to the form he once had? Do the guys have any theories as to why he can't even get minutes at Everton?
It's an absolute mystery. And of course, you want to see young players come back. I think there's great stories when you see youngsters that are struggling, Kay, and then come back and they look in the mirror and they find themselves again. Of course he can come back because he's a young kid and he's a talented boy, but there must be something a little bit deeper going on because he didn't get any minutes under a lot of good managers at Tottenham. So when you're someone like Dele Alli, you know, and you go through Pochettino and you go through Jose Mourinho and you go through Antonio Conte and Nuno, at some point you've got to look in the mirror and you go, is it me? And one day it will happen. It has to happen, otherwise he won't come back. And the day that he looks in the mirror and says, is this me? And he realises it's him, then he can knuckle down, work hard, because that's the only thing that ever gets you through this is hard work. It's not sulking. It's not blaming four different managers. It's you coming in early, putting in the work, staying behind, doing extra shooting, extra dribbling, extra crossing, extra finishing, whatever you might want to do. And then there's always a way back. There's always one game, Kay, if you play well in, when you get your chance, that you can make it back.
All right, I will stick with Everton, so I'll stick with you, Don, because it's your former club and it's one of your good mates. If Everton get relegated, is it over for Frank Lampard managing in the Premier League again for a while? I said your former club, make sure that it's not your former mate.
No, I honestly think they probably won't sack him. I mean, unless they lose every single game and it's a disaster, I think they'll have confidence in Frank going down into the Championship. I think it's the right thing to do. As I said, unless they go and get beat 5 against Man United and then 5 against Leicester, then obviously that sort of position becomes untenable. But if you go down with a fight and you show spirit, I'm looking at a team now that's not good enough, Kay. There's no fight in them. There's no leaders. There's not a lot of quality. So if you change the manager, if Everton go down, I think in my humble opinion, and I'm not talking because Frank's a friend, I think it's the wrong thing to do. I think give him a chance because of the job that he's done at Derby.
But what about him managing in the Premier League again for a while if he is to go down?
Well, you give him the chance of coming back up with Everton and then you'd say, well, you know, it's been done before. Rafa Benitez took Newcastle down and he brought them back up, so it can be done and it has been done. So I think you at least in my opinion, have to give them the opportunity to, if they do go down, is have a summer window where you have a massive clear-out because the individuals and some of the big names are not good enough and they've been proved that, and I think this season. So I think you give Frank the chance. I think you see if they can come back. If they come back, amazing. If they don't come back, then it's a struggle.
In the interest of needing more talk about Real Madrid Chelsea, Xhaka, what would it be like for a keeper trying to track the ball on either of Benzema's headers, especially the one that came on the curling cross from Modric that Benzema curled into the opposite corner?
Listen, I honestly don't think there's anything Mendy could have done about either of those two headers. Right after the second goal, Stevie Nicol called me to ask about Mendy's... Without getting to these specifics, it was early enough. It was early enough in the day for Steve to still form full sentences. Let's just leave it at that. And to ask about Mendy's positioning and movement. And the thing is, as a keeper, you don't see how that ball is going back there. When that ball meets Benzema's head, everybody in the stadium watching thinks that ball is going one place, and that's to the goalkeeper's right. How Benzema does that is simply beyond me. And not only put it back that to the keeper's left with the precision, not that it was a powerful header, but it had enough pace on it. I mean, just in pure footballing terms, that was as good a header as you will see in football, anywhere, anytime. As a keeper, that's not what you're expecting. That's not what you're playing for. So you do sympathize. So as far as the headers go, You just take that on your chin and say it was a great goal. There's no keeper in the world was ever going to say that. Save that. And you just move on.
Mm. Quick question.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm.
Stevie calls you.
Mm-hmm.
You see Stevie.
Yeah.
Right? A lot of thoughts go through your head.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And you have to go through this thought process and then make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
Answer the call or not.
Mm-hmm.
How did we get to answer the call instead of ignoring it?
I checked the time. I see it's roughly 3:30, 3:45. Is TV on the show? Is he not?
Mm.
How deep into his shepherd's pie is he at this point?
Okay.
You know, these things you have to calculate. And you think,
Ali, do you ignore Stevie's calls?
I don't think Stevie calls me, first of all.
He calls me.
I don't know that I qualify. No, he does call me, but I usually when I'm at home, I have my cell phone away and because I'm a family man, okay?
Right.
I'm with the family, fully engaged, and I don't pick up the cell phone.
But you know, usually just saying, what time are we in? Am I on today?
Yes.
Well, you see, yeah. Let's be honest. From the time it hits 7:30, 8 o'clock, Steve Nichols' calls aren't the ones you want to be at.
All right.
You know, we know, and Stevie knows that.
All right.
Stevie knows that.
We love you, Stevie.
Stevie's missus knows that.
Shaka, there's a lot coming for you.
What?
Oh. I read that the jersey Maradona wore when he scored the Hand of God goal will get over $5 million at auction.
Mm.
How much would your most famous jersey fetch in an auction today? Surely the jersey that Shaka wore when Ronaldo scored his first Premier League goal would sell for a lot.
I think my most popular jersey would be the jersey I wore against Sweden in the World Cup. Well, that's one. That's a good one.
And how did you do in that game, Shaq?
Well, as it happened, trying to be able to draw against Sweden 0-0.
Uh-huh.
It was Zlatan's first start at a World Cup for Sweden, and maybe set the tone for the rest of his World Cup experience.
Ah.
But don't tell him I said that.
And did that feature in his book as well?
That part did not.
Oh, no, but what about the part of the goalkeeper from Trinidad and Tobago?
Yes, that certainly did feature.
Uh-huh.
And I signed his book for him because I'm a nice guy.
Wow. You're special.
I'm a nice guy like that.
If you were going to, what do you think is the jersey that you'd be able to sell for the most in your own collection?
I think.
It has to be one of yours.
Oh, no, well then. What are we talking about?
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
She was whole mood changed. She's like, let me see. I got some.
Are you kidding me now?
My jersey.
No, there must be some nice comfortable ones in there.
No, actually, the one that I think would garner the most attention, and see, I'm a global superstar, okay? I'm going to say Hong Myung-bo from South Korea. He was the captain of South Korea in the 2002 World Cup. He was actually the bronze ball winner. And he played with me with the LA Galaxy, and I have his jersey signed by him. So if I went to Seoul and I said, here we go, I got this going on, I think I can get some money out of
it. You got that.
I'm not gonna do it because he's a dear friend of mine.
All right, Don, have you got a jersey that you think would fetch a bit of dough?
Does it have to be mine or can it be a swap?
It can be a swap.
Lothar Matthäus, when I scored the winner in Germany and me and Lothar Matthäus swapped shirts and he took his shirt off and he accidentally took his shirt off and left his captain's armband inside the shirt. So I've got that framed indoors. It's a beaut.
I don't quite understand why, while telling us that the swap was Lothar Matthäus, he had to remind us that he scored the game winner. Was that necessary? Was that
why?
I mean, that's just.
Well, he wouldn't have even been in with a looking for the shirt.
Or it could be my shirt when I scored the winner at Wembley against England. Take your pick.
Hey! See, there we go. That's it, Don. That's it.
That's a good shirt.
Why did that get brought up, Don?
Well, just to let you know, you're allowed one answer, and you just get involved.
Kay's not pleased with you at all.
Let her know, Don.
You just, go on, Don.
I believe you,
go on,
Don. Good job, I'm a quarter Scottish, isn't it? All right.
Quarter Scottish now.
Kay, you can have my Rochenbach shirt.
Oh, okay. Fabio Rochenbach.
Swap shirt for Rochenbach.
Yeah.
All right, I'll take it. All right, a couple of quick fire for Xhaka. Xhaka, who is currently the best goalkeeper in the world? You have some choices. Donnarumma, Alisson, Mendy, Edison, or Thibaut Courtois?
Courtois.
All right. Do you care to elaborate? Or
No, I thought you said quick fire questions. I was like, bro, who's cool?
All right.
People don't know this, right? But so Kay, as she's going through the questions, she crosses out the questions. Right, well, if there's only two left, and you said quick fire, why do you need to go on second to last question?
I'm ready to go.
There's
Come
only
on.
One left.
Come on, Murray, let's go.
It's a habit. I'm actually fuming at what Don said, aren't I? So I'm just like, taking my anger. Right. Kay, please ask Xhaka to pronounce temperament so we can all have a laugh and tell him that English is not a Latin-based language as he claimed. Hashtag Yachtgate, hashtag Hammer of the Year.
Temperament.
No! No! No!
Let me tell you something.
No.
Temperament.
I did some research on this. I called four people in Trinidad about this, and we all said temperament.
Hey.
It's not my fault we speak English better than you English speakers.
Hang on. So you're saying that English is a romance language now?
Huh? I have no idea why. I just said something just to get out of it.
That was diversion. Look at the birdie over here. Do not pay attention to temperament.
I was trying to get out of something. I don't know what. What?
Could you try and say it the way I just said it? Just want it. Temperament.
Temperament.
But it's temperament.
That's wrong.
Right.
I can say it. Temperament. I can say it, but it's wrong. It's temperament.
Hey, even the people behind camera cannot stand the pronunciation of temperament.
Temperament.
Our camera guy back there, our friend Mike, who's going on a fancy vacation. Ooh,
Don't bring up Mike's vacation.
Mike, temperament or temperament?
Temperament.
Yeah! You did say temperament in case you couldn't hear.
He's American. He can't speak
Leslie.
English. It's not my fault we in Trinidad and Tobago speak the Queen's English better than the English. It's not my fault.
I'm not all English, all right? I'm a quarter Scottish.
Oh, yes, yes, that's right.
Don't forget, you speak that Latin.
That's right.
Don, lastly, would you rather spend the rest of your life in Millwall, or every meal you have has melted cheese on it for the rest of your life? Let us reiterate.
I'd eat melted cheese.
Wow.
Oh my goodness.
Every single meal for the rest of your life.
Or live in Millwall. Cheese.
Do you have an opinion on Millwall?
No,
well?
I've got no opinion on Millwall.
Not getting involved.
None.
Yeah. I'm not getting involved either.
None. Okay. Cheese.
That's it. Cheese. Cheese it is. Every single meal. All right, next time you're here then, Don, we'll make sure that we give you melted cheese on everything.
Okay, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Thanks so much for being
here. It's not that nice.
Scottish Murray staying away from the Millwall question.
But with a very calm temperament, that's why.
Temperament. Temperament.
See you tomorrow.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.